This month's episode of the Devin Townsend Podcast is again presented by Inside Out, and this month's featured release is by a band called Sometime in February. Stay tuned at the end of this episode where we talk to Tristan from this band, and he will let us know why you need to listen and why you should care.
Devin, here again. Thanks for tuning in. This month, I am fortunate to have been able to interview a new friend in my world. This is Jordan Rudess, plays in Dream Theater, and we spent a year touring over the past couple of years. I think all told, I was out with Dream Theater for a long time, and I had a lot of opportunities to talk with Jordan and spend time with him and to jam with him. And he's probably the only sort of classically trained musician that I know, at least one that functions in the rock sphere. And I was interested in sort of getting his perspective on certain aspects of the work and the process, and he didn't let me down. He's literally a wizard. So, enjoy. This is Jordan Rudess.
It's almost NAMM. Almost like we got back from NAMM, yeah.
Yeah, right? So, might be some clearing of the throat, etc. during this podcast.
Cool, man. How you doing?
Yeah, it was actually a good NAMM show. Mm-hmm. Seeing lots of friends and, you know, all that was excellent. Of course, you get home and you're completely burned out and tired and sometimes sick. That's not great, but other than that, good.
My cuticles are a mess because of the amount of hand sanitizer I was using.
Right, exactly.
Well, thanks for taking the time to do this, brother.
Absolutely, my friend. How was your NAMM show?
Successful, but I went into it with a different frame of mind this time. I think the last few that I've went, it seems silly in hindsight, but I went with this predetermined hatred for the event, but still went. So there's this sense of like, well, if you're choosing to go to something and you know what it's about and you still resent it, then that's on you, you know? So this time I went in with a different frame of mind and I got a lot accomplished and it was exhausting, but it was good.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, okay. So I got a bunch of questions and I'd love to pick your brain because your brain is enormous. Okay. The intent of this podcast for me has been to interview people whom I respect to get their perspectives on almost like dissection of their creative world in some way, to try and draw parallels between everybody and then hopefully to find some solutions for people who are struggling with writer's block or just the whole process of creating in the first place. So the first question I have for you is, what was your favorite movie when you were a kid, like 8 or so?
Well, the one that stuck on my mind was The Wizard of Oz, because it used to enter my dreams all the time. So the first one that comes up.
Yeah, how did it enter your dreams?
Oh, that witch just freaked me out. I thought, many nights I thought the witch was coming by my window or just like waiting for it. It was, it was spooky.
Did you have hobbies when you were that age too, or a little older?
I never really had many hobbies outside of making music. I've been always very one-sided. You know, once I started playing the piano and going on that path, which was very classical at first, it was kind of like this road that never kind of like stopped and stayed very pure, if you will.
So it was Wizard of Oz and then piano.
Yeah, right. Then keyboard wizard.
Then keyboard wizard. Nothing existed between those times. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Right. I try to keep the wizard theme going, you know?
Well, it's well earned.
I hope so.
So you were obviously schooled from a young age in piano, and then obviously theory. You went to Juilliard, and you've had a significant amount of theoretical training. Am I right with that?
Yeah, definitely. My childhood was very, very serious. Had some great teachers, a nice solid musical foundation, especially when it comes to like playing the piano. And it's basically, it's what I do. It's the structure that I build everything off of.
So in terms of it structurally, was theory something that you felt you had a proclivity for and you were drawn to, or was it a necessary thing for you to be able to articulate music? Did you learn it?
Yeah. Well, when it comes to like music theory, I think that I was always good at it because, you know, I just have a natural thing for music. I've never been very like academic, so I was able to kind of like do the music thing just because of my kind of natural talent with it. So, and at this point, I don't know how you feel about it, but sometimes I try to almost like erase some of the academic stuff that we learned. People start talking to me about this mode or that mode and all this stuff. I'm like, I kind of don't even want to know about it because I don't want to. It almost feels like it's going to block my creativity. But that said, for anybody who is thinking what I'm thinking, they're thinking, yes, it is helpful sometimes to learn a bit of theory. Like, you know, if you're a guitar player, you can learn that if you're playing like a 1-4-5 progression, you could try this mode over it and it might, yield some good results. So you can use theory as a tool to maybe expand your world a little bit. Absolutely. So I just want to make sure that that's clear.
It is. Yeah. So were you theoretical by nature? Or was it just like a curiosity or just circumstance?
Yes, it's part of my general environment in those days. Because I had my education was very well rounded. I would go and I'd have like theory class and I'd have ear training and I took composition as well as my, piano. Piano was the focus, piano performance. And I did that actually. I don't know if you know, but I did that from the age of 9 at Juilliard until I left when I was 19.
So you started in Juilliard when you were 9.
Yeah, I was surrounded by kids who were like writing operas and all kinds of wacky.
So literally it was Wizard of Oz into Juilliard.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually that's great.
That's like a lyric.
Yeah, man. Okay, so I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. We were disagreeing about a philosophical concept. And at the end of the conversation, we realized that we just were speaking of it coming from different directions. Mm. We had a different way, a different language that we felt we were able to communicate the thing. And it started as discontent between us and ended up when we realized, hey, this is the same thing, that it's clear that there's just different ways of expressing things. Do you think that with theory, it's a language that can be used to quantify emotions, maybe not quantify it, but dissect it?
Well, let me make sure I understand when you say theory, what you really mean.
Please.
The first thing is that what I think of is my music theory class.
Okay. Yes.
Where are you?
That's what I mean.
Coming from?
That's what I mean. The understanding of, say, if you were to listen to a piece of music by Mozart or Bach and you were able to say, okay, I understand the modality they used. I understand the circumstances that this period it was written in pertained to, the types of themes that they may use.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. That's more what I mean by theory. Okay. My line of questioning is based on trying to determine if theory in the sense that I just described is essentially a language that one can learn to understand the emotional components of music.
Got it. Well, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I think that, learning theory, music theory, and understanding all that surrounds, a composition like a Mozart piece or Bach piece, the time period, the counterpoint, the harmony. I think all of that is awakening, and it's just this like growth that you can have when you start, like any kind of knowledge, if you feed yourself information and expand your mind. I think that that could very well lead to an emotional reaction. So I think what I'm kind of feeling and thinking is that, having knowledge is a way to allow yourself to get that much deeper into whatever it is you're doing in terms of music. If we're studying a Bach fugue or something like that, and you really kind of know what's going on, I think there's a good chance that you'll connect to it emotionally more than somebody who has no idea what's going on. And not to say that a listener who doesn't understand how a fugue is put together couldn't respond to it emotionally, but I think as a musician or as a music theorist, that could be a very large, grand experience if you really know what's going on and you invest in it and you learn about it, and all of a sudden you're kind of like, you know, you're at a higher level with the whole thing.
You are arguably the most learned musician that I know. I mean, I don't know anybody else who went to Juilliard when they were nine, at least, you know. So a lot of the reasons why I ask this is because it's coming from a place that I'm very curious about. And the reason I think I'm curious about it is when we think about artificial intelligence and we think about how music and art gets produced through these algorithms, how much of the emotional experience can be quantified? So for example, if the language that we engage in terms of understanding music theory from a classical perspective allows us to understand the emotional components of a piece of music, at least on some surface level, how much further can we go? And at what point would that, would the randomization of those equations result in truly emotional versions of artificial intelligence music?
Wow. Okay. Well, you're jumping right into AI, which is good, because I'm jumping into it.
Totally.
You know.
I do know.
Yes. So it's a great question. I mean, I think it all comes down, for me, all this work with technology, everything that I do, and it's very much, and I'm very much involved in the technology, using it, building it, helping to shape it as well. It all comes back to us as human beings. Like, why the hell are we doing it in the first place? Like, if it didn't inspire me and didn't make me feel better, didn't enrich my life, then I would have nothing to do with it. So I think that there's a lot to be said about not only the creation of music through artificial intelligence, but maybe even more so about being involved in it, almost like we were talking about theory. Like, if you know about it, you're deep inside of it, you have information, then you can actually embrace it and become even more emotional with it. So with artificial intelligence, my journey is that, like, I help to train the network to understand more about who I am. And then in interacting with what happens as a result of that, that gives me information, and that makes me larger and more inspired to then start this kind of like interaction. But it's all about the human being. It's all about my own growth, really. Like, what am I getting out of it? I think that's a big part of it.
Well, if you were able to define, like, in a real simple way, what you're getting out of it, would it be based on ultimately like curiosity, do you think?
I think it's information and entertainment. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when you start looking at, like, you know, I was doing this thing with one of my programmer friends. We were looking at my lead style. We were literally trying to program to see if we could get the application to play a Jordan style lead by running your finger over a playing surface smoothly. So, and it works, and it's a little bit, it's one of the things that I find a little bit scary, actually, but it does work. But in doing it, it was a chance for me to really look at my style and really study, what is it that I am doing? What happens when I play like a little arpeggio and then I come down in a blues scale? Where do I go usually? What kind of intervals do I play? And kind of like, even why do I do that in terms of trying to make a certain sound? So I think that process was a learning process for me. I think that kind of thing made me a better player. I get to really study what's going on. So, yeah.
It's interesting in the sense then that when we were talking about classical theory in the beginning, there's some parallels between that and training an algorithm to understand how to react based on the input, whether or not it's your finger over a surface or the variables that go into a certain type of decision in machine learning. And so I guess the question ultimately with that is, is the human experience quantifiable?
Use another word other than quantifiable.
Is the human experience able to be translated to a machine?
Okay.
In a language that can replicate emotions that other human beings will really understand?
Yeah, I actually think that that is possible. I mean, think about it. I just had a little flash of an idea. Think about when we record to a digital platform and we do our recording. You know, in my case, I'll play in some notes on my MIDI keyboard and then it plays it back. At that point, I'm not there anymore. It's not me anymore in the sense that I played it. Now it's this digital machine that is literally playing back what I did. So I guess a question for the room is, at that point, is that much different than if I train this neural network so that when I play 12 measures and then ask it, based on my training, to play 12 more?
Is it? Let me think. You know, I mean, it's different in the intent, I think, because the intent is coming from you and the replication of it is coming from the machine.
Yes.
So if you can program the intent,
yeah,
then I think it poses an existential question in a way.
Yeah, right. Sure. It's, yeah, I mean, I think if I program the machine well enough and I play 12 and ask it to play 12 back.
Yeah.
I'm successful and I really put my heart and soul and mind and knowledge and learn how to train the network, then wow, that's awesome. Amazing. You know, cool. And I probably would feel an emotional response back from it. Because it's based on what I put into it as a human being with emotions and all that. If I'm programming in all the velocities I play and the kind of timing that I do and the kind of chord decisions that I make, and it plays back something based on if an artificial intelligence music generator, you know, does create something, you know, that, and it was really good, that'd be amazing. I know that a lot of people have a lot of problems with this. So let me just say that I'm not just saying this like without being sensitive to our whole musician community and all the way they feel about it. But yeah, this is the way I think about it.
Would you fear it if it was autonomous and it was able to create something that was superior to what you or I could create?
Well, it'll probably only do that when I'm long gone, so I probably won't worry about it.
Really? Do you think it's that far away?
Well, I think it's a little bit far away to get that good. I mean, like, just to tell you what I've experienced so far. I mean, we'll see some things that are cool very soon. And we already see things that are cool. But as an example, I was at a laboratory, a secret laboratory, if you will, where we were doing some AI work, and I was doing this thing where I would play like 32 measures of piano into it, right? And it recorded it. And then I go back and say, okay, great. From measure 12 to 24, take that out, what I did, and let the artificial intelligence fill in the middle. So it did, and we tried it a bunch of times, and we were using one of these servers that has as much information as anybody does in the world. And when it came back to me, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. But stylistically, it was very different than what I would have done. So it was basically filling in that space with something that was cool, but it was not me at all. So I felt like, emotionally, I felt like, well, that doesn't really connect with me. It's interesting. If you played it for somebody, they might say, oh, that's interesting. My goal is to give the machines information about who I am so we can start to get to a point where, you know, you're at home and you're working on a song and you play something and, you know, like measure 14 through 18, you're kind of like, I don't know, like I'm having a bad day, whatever. Just give me something based on my style. And that's like, to me, that's like the next level tool. If you've really done the work properly and you've trained it to be like Devin Townsend, then hey, what a great tool. You know, you can say, oh, that's great. But now, you know, that's fine. But in measure 17, I think that I would rather have this chord and maybe that chord. I mean, you know, from a certain point of view, there are all these tools. These are tools, right? I mean, you can think of them that way as well. And maybe that's a really good way for people to begin to think about it. We've had a lot of musical tools through the years that keep on getting better. You know, all the DAWs that we use, all the different applications we use to make music. I mean, there's a lot of helpers there right now. And to write lyrics, there's a million helpers as well. This artificial intelligence thing is the next level of tool. How you use it is up to, you know, each person.
When you were a teen or early 20s, during the time where this type of thinking seemed to be important, were you ever like a philosophically minded cat?
Maybe a little bit, but always just coming at it from a musical respect, always very one-sided, you know, maybe a little more philosophical as I got older.
Well, there's some people that I've talked to that have this thought that there's no such thing as a personal, and I'm making it simpler than it is. There's no such thing as an original musical idea. It's like the Carl Jungian, I guess, which I'm also not well versed in, idea of the collective unconscious, where all music and all the ideas and all the riffs and all the things exist already. And then your job as a creator is to fine tune your antenna so you're able to do the work to articulate things that are already there.
Right.
How does that sit with you?
That resonates with me, because, and I feel like, That's interesting to hear you just say that, because I kind of feel like all the information is there. And I feel like if there's anything that makes me like a, you know, unique or special musician, it's that ability to kind of take it all in almost without thinking about it. And it becomes a soup in my brain, in my musicality. So what comes out is this kind of, you know, this mix, or this mix up, depending on how you view it. And, you know, some people, when they're putting together their ideas and becoming a musician, they think, I'm going down the jazz route, or I'm going down the rock route. And it's almost like you're kind of like narrowing your scope for what you're willing to take, what you're taking in. Because if you work in a certain format, if you work in rock, if you work in jazz or even classical, it means there's going to be almost like a smaller window, and it's going to be limitations on you. That people do amazing things and, you know, beautiful things for sure. That's not who I am at all. I have a harder time of closing the window than just leaving it wide open and allowing things to just come in and then just go out. For me, that's what feels right. That's what's interesting. And that's kind of like what I'm comfortable with. I'd have a harder time being a jazz musician or being a classical musician or a rock musician, but allow me to mix the styles as I will. And, you know, that'll work well. So back to the question in a way is that, or the thought is that, yeah, I think it's all out there. It's how you take it in and how you process it and how you put your emotions behind it and how you put it out into the world.
And so for people who are listening to this and hear you say that, would you have any guidelines as to how to, if you are fortunate enough to be privy to a melody that comes to you in some way, what is involved in your creative process that allows you to articulate that? Discipline, for one, of course, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the kind of instruments that we play, like pianos and guitars, are all very mechanical. So you need to develop technique. It's very serious. I've been trying to learn how to play the guitar and reminded of how mechanical it really is. You know, you want to learn this technique of hybrid picking. It's one thing, and it takes coordination and timing. And then you're doing economy picking. It's a whole nother thing. And it's to be able to articulate a musical word or phrase on an instrument takes time and practice and patience, right?
What do you find the parallels between when you're looking at a keyboard and you're looking at a guitar fretboard?
Yeah, it's really very different.
How, in your opinion?
Yeah, first of all, the guitar is a little bit baffling to me because it's all these dots and spaces, and there's no, if I just look down quickly, I kind of almost don't know which place I'm looking at. So that's why I think it's probably a good thing for, most guitar players I talk to have relative pitch. And I have perfect pitch, so when I look at the guitar, I want to know that on that dot, on that string, is a certain note, right? And if that changes, that's not a good thing for me.
Ah.
So if somebody handed me a guitar that was tuned down to C, I would be pretty upset, right?
When you first looked at a piano keyboard when you were 9 or 8 or whenever it was, did you immediately see patterns?
Well, the 2 and 3 thing of the black keys is, at least the way I remember it, is very descriptive to me. There's one place to play each note, where on the guitar, as you know so well, there's many different choices about where you could play each note. So that creates a little bit of a, thing where there's a lot of different roads you can go down to play a simple phrase. So yeah, I'm just, and the reason I'm even doing this guitar thing, actually, to kind of jumping to that, is because I feel like it's mind opening for me. It's giving me more information. It's, some people do puzzles, they do word games, whatever it is. In my case, I picked up another instrument and I'm trying to learn it in all different ways. I think it's a similar kind of a thing for me.
Yeah, it's like a huge appetite for this type of information. It's amazing, man. So when it comes to guitar, where are you at?
Yeah, well, I'm in an interesting place because in some ways I do things that my friends look at me and go, "Oh my God, how the hell are you doing that?" Like I'll do like these two hand things where I'm playing, with all my fingers of the right hand and my left hand. And then they'll say, "Well, let's play some chords." And I go, "What's a chord?" I mean, I do know some chords, but there is, what I'm trying to say is there's some gaps there. Like play a song. I'm like, "No, I want to do, I want to do this, or I want to play one hand on the keyboard and play the same, harmony on the guitar."
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean, my patience isn't the same as when I was a kid. So I think one of my goals to learn patience and the guitar is to maybe sometimes stop and go, "Okay, this is cool that I can do that, but now I gotta, kind of learn how to do some other things that are more basic to the instrument." So that's where I'm at with it.
I appreciate you tolerating my odd questions for one.
Well, I like that.
Okay, so here's another one. Okay. I was having a conversation with another friend the other day about the idea that gut biology, the state of the biological systems that are in our bodies create, the organism that is us, that has a sense of self, that same sense of self that would be what would determine a part of an artificial intelligence song that is worthy or not emotionally viable. That sense of self I had heard described as a survival mechanism of a ton of cells and biomes and parts of our system that individually thinks of themselves as unique. So again, when we get to the idea of artificial intelligence, how much of the self is like an illusion in that way? And then if that's the case, if it's just the conglomeration of a bunch of self, contained systems, could that not be achieved while we create these things? And therefore, eventually, we're just like, "Oh, I want to hear something that emotionally makes me feel melancholy, but programmed into my proclivities and my background and all these things," and then just hit a button and then all of a sudden you've got that.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're not an ordinary interviewer, are you?
I only interview people who I think are awesome though, so there's that.
No, it's deep. I think that this whole life is way beyond what we can comprehend, and there's so many different levels of existence.
Agreed.
And a lot of people, we've got if you look at the kinds of people that are out there that we know, there's some people that are very grounded, like in what we would say is this reality, right? They're however you want to think about it. They really care about the day to day and, you know, things that are important, but they're just, you know, we would say they're extremely grounded, mm-hmm. right? First of all, that is not me. For anybody who thought I was, it's not me. I'm very like kind of artistic and cerebral, and maybe it's too easy for me to let go and just kind of go for this ride, if you will, to sit at the piano and go for some journey and forget about everything else that happened that day. So that's where I'm coming from, you know, with thinking about this kind of thing. So, but again, relating it to like, you know, what we were talking about with artificial intelligence and all that, I feel that there is this possibility of having a machine kind of like embody a lot of the things that we think are like emotional and very personal. Again, it's a matter of training. It's a matter of telling these incredible devices how we think and what we do. And then when it comes back to us, when we listen, when we interact, then we have our human response. That's what it's all about. Mm. I mean, I think I showed you, this is not AI, but I think I showed you this app that I'm working with this guy in the UK. It's called Riffler.
Yeah.
Can I turn you on to that?
Yeah, you showed me
that. Amazing, right? It's an amazing tool. It's an application that creates riffs basically out of nowhere. And you can put it on and it'll create riffs 24 hours a day in certain styles. Like if you put it in the modern metal style and pick like djent or something like that and hit go, oh my God, like, hey, that's a good riff. Oh, wow, that's another good riff. And that's a good riff. And as you're listening to it, you're reacting and you're feeling like, oh, that's cool. You know, that's got a vibe to it. It's groovy. It makes sense to me. You want to move to it. And right then what that machine did based on its rules just created an emotional reaction in you.
That's cool.
You could say, I don't like it because I can write my own riffs and how can that replace me? That's a whole another, you know, maybe it's not a different argument, but it's another way of thinking about the whole thing.
I'd love to hear your opinion on it.
Yeah. I'm not scared of this stuff. For me, it's another, that's why I really choose the word tool, because I view these things as tools. They could be extremely advanced and like Riffler could play riffs all day long, but you know what? I'm not going to make an album with just using Riffler. I'm going to listen to it and go, I dig that. That's cool. It's going to inspire me. Maybe it'll educate me. What the hell do I know about djent? Right? Maybe one day I'll sit at the guitar or whatever and go, dun, 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 and maybe somebody will say, well, that's like a djent riff, but I'll be lucky. But if I listen to Riffler and it's playing djent and I respond emotionally and it gives me an idea, well, it just added to my knowledge. So I can go, oh, yeah, that's cool, but it would be better if it was these notes instead of the ones it played. Or I like that those two beats, and now I'm going to add this to it. So it always comes back for me. It always comes back to me. Like, how do I want to shape the information that comes in from my antennas and the outside world and all the music that's been created from other people that are not inside of me? I'm just picking up their ideas as almost like the Jordan machine is picking up their ideas and processing it and putting it out. In this case, like a Riffler, that's processing information, putting it out, and I'm taking it in and going, okay, I'm learning from that too, and I'll make this out of it. It's all like this information stream that we put out and that we have come back, and it's this amazing circle of like information and inspiration and energy, frequency energy. Really, it's all that.
100%. And just to be clear, I consider AI to be a tool in a similar way. I use it as well to generate ideas more visually than anything else. Like I've got a subscription to Midjourney, and as I'm writing, I'll type in lyrics, and then I've got a screen dedicated to it. So I can just sort of illustrate certain riffs or certain ideas.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find that makes it maybe, and who knows how I'll feel in the long run, but at least right now, the thing that I don't find frightening about it was explained to me by somebody I had a meeting with who has created, I forget the name of his system, but it's one of the big ones where it creates the songs by typing in text. I forget the name of it. No. Right. Okay. But he gave me a term that I thought was great called Bach Faucet. And I don't know if you've heard of that.
No.
Bach had so many musical ideas that during the course of his life, the quality of his ideas weren't recognized at the time because there was too many of them. So it's almost like people got tired. They're like, oh, that's just Bach. Of course it's brilliant. Right. But there was no like, you know, if he did it once or twice or three times, you know, over the course of his career, it would have been the impact at the time would have arguably been bigger because they weren't besieged by this brilliance. And in the same way that Midjourney or ChatGPT ends up vomiting out.
Yes.
Perfect images in a lot of ways.
Right.
I find for myself that I tune them out. And not because I don't think they're beautiful, not because I don't think they're deep or engaging, but because there's a characteristic to it of perfection that I think perhaps drives the creative minds of musicians in general. Because I don't know about you, but if I ever made a perfect record, what would be the...
What does that even mean?
Well, for sure. But hypothetically, there is such a thing as a perfect record. Let's just say that for me, at least, or for you. And in my mind, I made this hypothetical perfect record. I wouldn't know what my motivation to continue after that would be. So in a sense, what keeps me going is the fact that I just keep making mistakes.
Yeah.
And it's like the procedural aspects of my work is more about saying, oh, maybe next time. And it's like this carrot on the end of the stick. Being aware of it is hilarious because then you're ultimately an imperfect perfectionist.
Right.
But maybe that's the distinction between what it means to be a human and for an AI algorithm to represent. They're just not as imperfect, right?
Yeah, it has to do with our personal journey of growth, which is the part that's interesting to us and interesting to other people. Like, especially like if we think about your career, like you do all different kinds of music. Like, you'll put one album out that's like a country album, the next thing you do in a pop thing, and next thing it's a thrash thing. It's because of what you decide and what you feel at that point in time. Different expressions.
What do you know about Neuralink or any of those sorts of technologies?
Not specifically. I don't know what Neuralink is specifically.
Nor do I, but from my limited knowledge of what it is, I guess the idea is there's, for example, I don't know how, if it's just a gimmick, but there was a thing that was released the other day that you can put around your head and it can control lucid dreaming and, you know, put Amazon into your dreams or whatever. Okay. But the idea of this suggests to me that eventually they're going to want to download your entire trip and then functionally immortal through different avatars or what have you. But if that's the case, they're going to have the ability to have a blueprint of exactly what you like and who you are and the experiences that you've had. And at that point, the imperfections can be calculated in a way.
Right, right. Well, I mean, all that's fine, but then how does it relate to us, the way we feel?
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't take, let's say there's a machine. I'm just thinking out loud. Let's say there's a machine in the room that is just somebody made, and it actually is a model of you.
Okay.
Right. But it's separate than you and you're talking to it and you're interacting.
Sure.
What's it about? I mean, it's all going to be like, you're inside of you, right? You can't come out of you. Everything you are is in this, you know,
sense of self.
So it's all about what you think and how communicating with this, you know, let's say artificial intelligence, Devin, like, what does that feel like? What's it doing for you? What is it teaching you? Is it helping you in any way? Is it going to help you write music? maybe you can take a nice Hawaiian vacation, you know, while the thing sits in your studio and makes an album. That would be amazing, right? You'd be so happy. You're like hanging out. Okay. And then you'd be bored and you go, you know what? I'm going to tell my, you know, my robot thing to just like, now you go to Hawaii. I'm going to stay here and make music.
Yeah, the implications of that, though, also come back to if it's our sense of self that is important to us, then how much of our sense of self is tied into our ability to create? And so if that's removed from us, where does our value lie? If that's your trip, if that's where you're at, right?
Right.
So if I had an avatar dev, the only thing I would hope is he had hair for one.
Me too. Mine would have the hair as well.
He'd be buffed and he had like, you know, full beard.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe we could make an avatar Jordan and we could also train it to play better guitar than I do right now. And then I could learn from it and grow from that.
Well, again, I guess what I was just wondering is, maybe the problem with it is less about the fact that our personal connection to the work is contained within who we are, but more so if we have versions of ourselves that are able to do things better than us with our background of information and emotional experience, including the imperfections, like, what does that do to us if our identity is so closely tied to what we make? Right. At that point, it's like, yeah, you're going to go to Hawaii, but you're going to be despondently looking at the water, you know?
I don't know. Maybe you'll be joyous. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. This is funny. Like, I know that we should have this conversation again in a year.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because I'm like diving into this big journey now. I'm going to be the visiting artist at the Media Labs in MIT. And, you know, they have like incredible stuff going on there that a lot of it, nobody even knows what, you know, what it is because it's so like outrageously advanced and cool. My focus is on AI music there, but I'm going to learn so much. And who knows, maybe in the course of the year, I'll come back and go, this shit is freaking me out, man. You know, like, I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, I'm a spacey musician and I'm cool with everything, but you know, a lot of times I'll mention AI, oh, it's the end of the world and you know, we're going to all die. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to go there. You know, like that's not what.
Hasn't it been the end of the world for hundreds of years though? Haven't there been placards available since the, you know, since the dawn of time saying that this is the end?
End of the world. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I got two more questions and I'll let you go. I really appreciate your time, man.
Oh, yours, buddy.
So, can you maybe first off just give us an overview of what you're working on in terms of technologically?
Absolutely. So, I started the thing with MIT. I went there, we had a nice little meeting and, you know, just getting this thing off the ground. The whole idea of that is to use AI with the end result of it being something that could be used in a performance. So both from a musically generative and responsive point of view, but also with physical, not only look at just generating music, but generating some kind of physical entertainment that's based on the musical information. That's the focus of it. So we started to really think about that stuff. Also, just today, actually, I'm involved with this company. I think I'm going to turn you on to it, or you might know about it. It's this company called Moisys. Do you know that? Moisys is this cool company. I'm like an ambassador for them. They are awesome and they do work in AI, although most people don't even realize it's AI. They just love what they're doing. It specializes in track. They started and it specializes in track separation. So you can upload an audio file to their server. You can decide how you want it to come back to you, the vocals separate, the bass, the drums, the piano, all these things. You can pitch and time it in different ways. It'll show you all the chords. Right. It'll show you the lyrics. Now it's doing this thing where it recognizes the various sections of a piece of music and loops them seamlessly. All kinds of amazing things. And one more thing that they're doing, which is really interesting, and I know you would appreciate it because we've spoken about this kind of thing before. If you have a vocal track, right, you can use some of these licensed models of different voices and assign the model to the vocal track that you have.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So unlike the synthesizer V thing, Dreamtonics, where you can play in notes on a MIDI keyboard and then assign a model to that, this actually uses an existing vocal track and you apply a model to that. That's in their Moises studio. But just today, I released that song. I turned you onto it like last week, I think, because it was hot off the press. It's called Embers, right? It's actually mixed by Jimmy T, who's the Dream Theater engineer. And we released it through the Moises platform literally today. So people can go there and they can just hear it and take it apart and do all the things that I was describing. So that's one of the areas of my interest too, because it's AI. It's not generating music, but it's using AI to figure things out. Like, hey, let's dig out the vocal of this part, even though the file it was just part of it, you know, or tell you all the words or show you all the chords or all this kind of cool stuff. So working with them has been, you know, really cool. Not so much technical, but, you know, of interest is I'm going into the studio to start working with Dream Theater again on a new album next week. Everybody's, you know, highly anticipating what's going to come out because we got our old drummer back, you know. So meanwhile, I don't think I've written one note of music yet. I'll have to turn on my special AI engine in my head to generate something.
The one with more hair.
Yeah. I have to turn the knob and have the antennas go up a little higher.
So that's great.
Antennas come in faster.
Awesome.
More furiously. But yeah, so there's always stuff going on. I have that Riffler app that I'm working on. I think I turned you on to this application that I worked on, which is called Vithm, which is a music visualizer, but it's like a performance music visualizer because it's very programmable. And it just keeps on getting bigger and bigger in terms of all the different modes it can do and the kind of audio it can take in. And it's really, really super fun. And of course, the other technological thing that I work on a lot is my app GeoShred, which is my partners that I met out of Stanford University, the Karma division. And that's all based on physical modeling. And that keeps on growing as well. So I'm just involved in all these fun things that I'm passionate about.
That's awesome, brother. I guess the second thing you were talking about where you're able to extrapolate from a stereo file, all the individual elements.
Track separation.
Yeah, I tried to use that recently on something and it, you know, to mixed results, but we're just in the beginning of it. And as you're speaking, I'm thinking, wow. You get that sophisticated enough and down the line, you could remix things that, you know, you could take out all the elements. You could take something you lost the master tapes for and then just be like, there's your kick, there's your snare, there's your hi-hat, there's that reverb, there's the, and that's thrilling in a sense. I really like the idea of that.
What about taking something, you know, you get all the frequencies available to you, and instead of taking out the piano, the bass, the drums, you draw an image with different amounts of like thickness of what you want to hear out of the track. You know, almost like a sound, like a, it could be some kind of really interesting sonic tool to like just create something entirely new.
Question for you. In a sine wave, is there a sine wave that exists that you could pull out of a single note all the frequencies, like entire octaves?
Well, a sine wave is the purest signal. So what you can always do is if there's a sound, you can rebuild it with sine waves.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's kind of like the nature of additive synthesis.
What sort of wave could you essentially take like a band pass sweep and go through a single note and pull out of it
all of them?
Yeah,
you could do that. Yeah, you could take some kind of a notch or like band pass and really kind of like fine tune it down. That kind of thing is really fun to do with cymbals and gongs and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Where it's got this immense harmonic content.
Yeah.
I remember one of the patches I once made for a Korg instrument where they hired me to make a bunch of different sounds. I took a cymbal and made it sing, basically.
Yeah.
So I just went in there and I went, okay, let's filter it. So I get rid of all this and it ends up being here. And that's like this really cool.
And I guess the harmonics of that too, if you could find a way to navigate through the harmonics of it as well, you could probably find any sorts of musical information that you would need in a cymbal.
Yeah, absolutely. If you could like bandpass it,
yeah,
and then have it like jump around like super fast, it could be like it's all there.
Yeah, that's
like a gong or a cymbal, right?
I love the idea of being able to explore a single sound as if it were a fractal, and then be able to freeze it, and then move into a different place, and then explore that, and then it's just, you know, it's the thrill of sound is still there for me. Music, of course, it morphs and moves according to our lives and our experiences. But I do find that sense of wonder with just the physics of sound is still there.
Yeah, I me too. I mean, that's why, you know, when I got away from Juilliard, literally left when I was 19, one of the reasons I left is because I discovered the Minimoog. You know, the Minimoog is this instrument that has all these knobs on it and switches, and you're just turning it. I had no idea what any of the technical names meant in those days. All I knew is if I moved this knob and I turned that switch and moved this wheel, it would create that sound. Mm. And although nowadays I know what all the words mean, that kind of synthesis is still so interesting to me because you're basically just like, you're just working with this open space of sound and you're fine-tuning which frequency using filters. Even, you know, the Minimoog is old now. Hmm. You know, it's how old is it? 50 years old.
Like that. Well, I had a few more questions, but I don't know if they're appropriate at this point. So I'm going to hold on to them. And I'm just going to say, I love you. And I really appreciate the work that you do and the times we spent together. And thank you so much for taking the time, man. You got so many things going on. It means a lot to me.
Oh my God, buddy. It's a pleasure always, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Well,
good luck with the record, man. To be a fly on the wall with that would be something that I'm sure there'd be a ton of people that are dying to know. So
yeah, right.
Yep.
Well, I'm also excited about some of the things you told me that you're going to be doing.
Oh, so yeah, man.
Incredible stuff. Yeah, and the picture you sent me of that studio space. Holy moly, what's going on there? I told you, I want you to put a little cot there. I'm moving in and that's it.
You're more than welcome. Welcome. I mean, it's like we're in a, as frightening as this whole period of time for creatives can be because of the uncertainty that is involved with everything. There's also so much potential. It's unbelievable. And it's almost like the last couple of years for me, although it hasn't been, like you say, I've got to write and I've got to figure out how to switch my brain back into the point where I'm feeling like a conduit to that sort of musical activity. Yeah, yeah. Right, so much of the last 2 years has just been trying to integrate technology and integrate new forms of learning and integrate new processes that are in reference to the ones in the past that are no longer serving us.
Yes.
So, absolutely. Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's a full-time thing.
Yeah, it is.
One of the thoughts that I had about that might be interesting for people to know about my music-making process. I think
Please.
You know it, but maybe other people don't. And also because it kind of relates to maybe my view and comfort with like technology, which is that if I sit down at the piano or any instrument that I know how to play, I could improvise all day without stopping and just come up with ideas, whether they're good or not. You know, I can decide, you can decide, whatever. But I kind of have to some degree the antennas and the mechanism to be able to articulate what's coming in real time and just play.
Where does that emotional freedom come? Because so many people can't do that. And I think a lot of it is because they're very self-critical.
Yeah. But for me, it's like, it's easier than talking. For me, it's all musical words that just come out. So whatever I feel, or even if I don't feel that much, maybe the music will be more bland. But there's something there that I can say.
Well, may I just ask you just a little bit more about that, because that's something that I and so many people struggle with, and it's you know, red light syndrome. As soon as you're recording, all of a sudden your awareness becomes so focused on not wanting to mess up or not wanting to fail or you know, and clearly if you're able to just have this constant dialogue on any given instrument improvisationally, that means that doesn't exist with you in some way.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point, because what it means, like if I'm sitting in my home and I'm at my piano and I'm relaxed, then it'll flow the smoothest. It'll just happen and there's nothing interfering with it. If we go into a studio and you hit the red light and we're recording, it will I'll play something. It'll come out. There might be more blocks. The antennas might have more distortion because I might be nervous about what I'm doing and overthinking it or thinking it has to be a certain way.
Yeah, maybe that's why some people who have, maybe autism or something, where their sense of self is different, where they're able just to sit in front of whoever and just maybe they're not able to have a conversation, not socially adept in the ways that you need to be a professional musician, but just as a constant stream of improvisation, perhaps. And there's something worth investigating there, I think, not only for myself, but for other people as well. It's how do you get over the fear of being embarrassed?
And how do you even do that is the question. I mean, it's like, you know, in my case, the way I do it is because it's a mixture of training, right? I learned the mechanics of, let's say, the piano. And then I learned a lot of musical words, not all of them, but I learned a good selection of musical words that can be called up. You know, I can play all the different scales, I can play all the different arpeggios, and, you know, absolutely there's some things that I don't do or can't do, but there's enough musical words there that I can just go for it and always play. But I will say that it's an interesting thing to be able to do. It's an interesting skill that not a lot of people seem to have. But also when it comes to composition, it's different because then you're like you're thinking about everything. Then you're going like, why couldn't I, you know, I could make an album that's purely improvised. I kind of have, but when I'm in the composing mode, then I stop to think about everything. Then it's almost like pencil to paper. Do I really want to go to that chord? Oh, maybe it'd be better if I did this. Oh, I think I'll try to move the bass a little bit. So then you're stopping the action to kind of go to make a lot of decisions. Where improvisation for me comes in handy in terms of composition is that since I do sit down and just play, like maybe if I'm with the band, Portnoy will go, oh my God, Jordan, what was that? And I'll go, oh, fuck, I don't know. well, let me see if I can remember what I did, you know, and then I'll go back and see if I can. If I do, I'll play it again. Then we'll go, that's cool. All right, let's build something off of that. What was it? 4 bars, 8 bars.
I was talking to a kid the other day too about, you know, just not wanting to do things for fear of failure or fear of being embarrassed. And I think, for many years, I struggled with this sense that because I function and my creative mind works in a way that is kind of opposite to a bunch of the people that I know and work, where I come at it from a visual sense, like, you know, colors and sounds and frequencies are kind of interconnected. I felt embarrassed that the way that I explained myself musically, people weren't relating to. But in a similar sense, when you say, okay, so the ways that you combat that, the red light syndrome, the fear of fucking up in front of people in a studio is through having a toolkit and the theoretical knowledge to be able to draw from. In a similar sense where I feel like, I'm coming at it from another point of view that is almost entirely the same is analysis, like self-analysis. And the function of the work ends up being a document of that because I think it's the same process. Knowledge is the antidote to fear, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I'll say to add another perspective about what we're talking about is that for me, a lot of the process of being a musician goes beyond, and for everybody, but in this case, goes beyond learning the tools, learning the scales, the antennas are up, but it's like a personal thing because you are taking in all this information, but there's so many things that can block it, ear, nerves, all this stuff. So what are we working on? Are we working on music or we're working on who we are as people to try to allow things to flow? It's very much, you know, well, you know this because I know that you'll do yoga and different things to kind of allow yourself to flow and, you know, relax so you can be who you want to be, right? And I'm very similar. Like I, you know, when I practice, like at the keyboard, I'll do the hard parts and I'll practice them in a way where I'm just like breathing while I do it or standing on one foot because I want to remember how do I want to feel when I do this. If you're in the studio and the red light goes on, instead of having to go, oh my God, like I can't improvise now because I'm too nervous and my hands froze, all this stuff, like all the distortions that can get in the way. It's a matter of how can you control yourself, mm-hmm. whatever pressure. How can you, you know, if you're having a horrible day and all of a sudden you go in to sit at the piano or pick up the guitar, are you able to just like breathe and kind of get rid of some of that stuff and allow the musical ideas to come in? Or are you totally like, you know, you don't have the tools to be able to turn off the outside world and allow inspiration to flow in? It's, you know, a lot of these things are just more than music. It's just challenges of taking care of oneself and kind of, you know, learning how to be comfortable, learning how to flow, and, you know, whether it's talking or playing music or, you know, obviously, like in my case, I've spent more time thinking about learning how to articulate my emotions and my thoughts by going like this than I have even by talking. So, you know, I'm not the world's greatest orator, but, you know, I like to think that I'm pretty good at playing the piano, you know, so... It's
you're one of my favorite people, Jordan. Thank you so much. You truly are a wizard, my friend. And until we meet again, I wish you all the luck in the world with the record. It's there's an example of like a red light fever that's big, you know what I mean, for everybody, right? So it's not just the people in the studio. You're like, wow. When we end this conversation, please don't hang up because it has to process this. Okay. So I'm going to stop it here. And then if we hang on the line for a minute, but brother, thank you so much for everything. I love you. Good luck.
Thank you, my friends. Great to see you.
You too, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. So this is called the New Music Minute. So thanks, Inside Out, because damn, what a year. This is Tristan from the band Sometime in February.
Okay, now I can hear you?
Yep.
Yeah!
Did it.
Solving technical problems, man.
It's our job.
Yeah, that seems to be the extent of it. Yeah, mm-hmm. So your name's Tristan and your band is Sometime in February?
That's right.
And you're located where?
I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Awesome, man. And what's your role in the band?
I am guitar player and have been up to this point primary songwriter.
Awesome. Who else is in the band?
So there's my bassist. His name's Morgan Johnson.
Okay.
And then there's our drummer. His name is Scott Barber.
And so it's a 3-piece, and is it instrumental or is it?
Yes. We are fully instrumental. It's kind of started as my own project, my vehicle for songs that I would write. And I'm no singer, so instrumental was the way to go.
Awesome, man. And so is this your first record?
So we put out our first record independently last year. Mm-hmm. So the one we have upcoming will be our sophomore, but our debut with Inside Out.
Awesome, man. So this is a quick thing just to get some attention to your record through Inside Out. So if someone was to ask you, what about your band is something that they should, why should they listen to it? I know it's a sort of a shitty question to ask, but like, why would somebody listen to your band? What do you offer?
Well, so the genre that I sit in, like very much the shredder oriented, you know, music. And, you know, of course there's, you know, the classic guys like Satriani or Vi, but then there's the, you know, contemporary people like Pliny or, you know, the Animals as Leaders types bands. And me, I can't put myself in necessarily the same class of guitar player as that. And so I like to think that it's more, while it does have, you know, the shreddy elements to it, and it's a guitar-led group and music that we play, I like to think of it more as like purely like song based, and it just happens to be a guitar that's the lead. Awesome. I take the most enjoyment out of it by, you know, during the writing process and the recording process. Like that is what is most fun to me. So the crafting of the song and adding all the layers to it, even more like on a producer type level, that is what I personally get out of it, and I hope that is what is translated with the end product.
So if I was to ask you to summarize the new record in one go, how would you do it?
It is, it's three guys just making music that is the end product of all of our influences. It is the end product of us getting together and making the music, and it is the result of our collaboration and what we have built up with each other.
Is it ripping?
And it's a journey, you know?
Is it ripping?
It's ripping. We are stoked for people to hear it.
Well, I'm stoked for people to hear it too, Millie. And maybe one time we'll meet, and good luck with your career, dude. So you're 24?
I am.
Yeah, man, it's a hell of a time to start getting into music. So you have both all my wishes of luck and my deepest sympathy, and good luck with your new record, brother. It's a pleasure to meet you.
I appreciate it.
You bet, man.
Thanks for having me.
The tools that make this podcast possible, provided by Roswell Microphones and X5.